lab cooperates closely with various industries, including hospitals in the field of environmental pollution monitoring, and acts as a research center for future innovations. This knowledge-based company provides many research services through its laboratories. For example, it previously carried out research projects in the field of oil refinery liquid waste. Another project was research on the treatment of synthetic resin sewage discharge using synthesized photocatalytic nanocomposites. These are used to gauge and remove pollutants in liquids for purification purposes. This company actively exchanges scientific information both nationally and internationally and regularly publishes its findings in academic journals at home and abroad. It collaborates with academic institutions and other research-based firms, providing them with test results. The government has been shifting more and more towards a knowledge-based economy that thrives on research. So knowledge spillover plays a big role in entrepreneurship, especially in cross-discipline research. Having labs in the country dedicated to advancing specialized research is very important. These types of knowledge-based companies help expand products in the market that may have been previously imported. It was the first company in the country to apply science for manufacturing wastewater treatment and purification. Its manufacturing workshops are massive, with a cumulative area of over a hectare to produce the giant water treatment systems. Its machinery is used in industrial settings where water is refined and returned to the system for reuse. Furthermore, its machinery has helped preserve valuable water resources nationwide. Some sectors that apply this technology are the food industry. In general, all industries that use water to produce their products are the end user of this company's water purification machinery. All of the technology produced here is manufactured along the lines of European standards. Its capabilities and products have been exported to regional areas, including Europe. As part of its future goals, this company wants to expand its product list and increase its exports. It's noteworthy that this company has created numerous job opportunities directly and indirectly. Among its staff, this company employs the capabilities of environmental engineers, among other experts, on its roster. Among its many competitive advantages, one can name the high-quality material that is used for productions of its water purification systems. But that's not all. This company has played a big role in creating technology that preserves all the fine qualities of water using advanced machines for purifications. Iran has been supporting the shift to a knowledge-based society by implementing plans that empower companies in their efforts to develop advanced technology. In fact, in 2010, the government passed laws promoting and supporting knowledge-based companies as part of the legal framework. This has paved the way for boosting innovation and scientific progress, leading to many social and economic advantages. In 2013, there were only 50 knowledge-based firms and startups. That figure has grown over the years to well over 6,000 companies, according to the Vice Presidency Office for Science and Technology. A diverse range of products is manufactured by these firms to meet the country's rising domestic demands. This has saved the country millions of dollars by reducing expensive imports. Iran makes thousands of different types of specialized technologies. The amount of progress of knowledge-based firms in the fields of medical devices, energy, and information communication technology is the most noticeable. Aircraft maintenance, mining, petrochemicals, and pharmaceuticals are among other disciplines researchers are focusing on. And exports of knowledge-based products are estimated to reach over $1 billion by the end of this year. That's based on figures from the Science and Technology Office. The National Innovation Fund says tech firms and knowledge-based companies raked in over $5 billion in revenues last year. Some 40 knowledge-based companies are listed in the stock market as well. So far, the government has implemented numerous policies and plans to help support knowledge-based companies over the years. Some of these schemes include loans with low interest rates, tax exemptions, and easing commercial license issuances. The goal is to encourage the development of Iran's tech ecosystem and boost lucrative high-tech productions for exports. Research steered by scientific investigation plays a huge role in product development. At its core, advanced technology is created by adding valuable features to items that have specialized uses. And academic and research institutions are the bridge between ideas and the commercialization of products. Several universities across Iran are providing services to help support knowledge-based startups. High technology is a product of advancements in national academic and scientific research. Iran possesses a lot of intellectual prowess as a whole. Evidence of this can be seen by the high number of academic publications both nationally and internationally. Nearly 70,000 academic articles were published in 2020 alone to show for it. Figures from the International Web of Science show Iran was globally ranked 16th in 2019 for its citation work. Numerous knowledge-based companies that provide valuable research and products are born out of university, tech park, and trade zone incubators. These establishments provide platforms that support the creation of new businesses in various fields of advanced tech development as they start up. Incubators offer services to entrepreneurial teams to successfully execute their ideas and help them compete in national and global markets. Moreover, incubators are an access channel for services such as workspaces and facilities, technical and legal consultations. These are important for the sustainability of both existing firms as well as innovative startup businesses. The goal is to increase regional economic growth and diversify the national economy. Such development support also strengthens the tech ecosystem and improves investment opportunities. Fire clay is basically mud, but a lighter, stickier type of mud with high alumina content. It's actually everywhere around us, but cannot be seen until it is uncovered from the earth. In its raw form, fire clay is found near or between layers of coal in coal mines. People have been extracting it from the ground for millennia to make bricks, ceramicware, tools homes, and a whole bunch of other things. Its qualities get even better when it's baked and stiffened. This clay has a great number of industrial uses and lasts nearly forever. Our quest for answers led us to a company that owns and manages at least 5 mines in Fars province. Esterlal Abadi Company specializes in the extraction of fire clay and the production of clay products. Fire clay is a refractory material that can withstand extremely high temperatures without losing its original properties. There are other types of refractories that this company also produces in small amounts, such as high alumina and melite ceramics. But its main claim to fame is the production of highly useful fire clay. It might be interesting to know that this company is not just a mine owner. It also has 3 factories. These factories make products like fire brick, washroom items such as sinks, and industrial ceramics. Its production facilities can make large amounts of ceramic parts that are used in various fields such as blast furnaces for coke, iron, and steel productions. Because fire clay is heat-resistant, this material presents excellent qualities for outdoor flooring purposes. One of the benefits is it doesn't crack or expand when exposed to hot climates. That is why it is widely used across the country, particularly in central and southern regions where temperatures can often exceed 45 degrees Celsius. The quality of fire clay is assessed by its levels of impurities. This company can produce some of the highest-grade fire clays in the West Asian region with around 75% purity. In general, when the material is extracted, it is then transferred to the Research and Development Department where it is tested for quality. One of the competitive advantages of this company over similar firms in this field is the quality of its products that match international standards. This holding company has created dozens of direct job opportunities over the years, and hundreds more people are indirectly hired as well. Out of some 50 fire clay mines nationwide, this mine has been the only producer that extracts its products along the lines of exports. This company has faced many challenges over the years to enjoy its many achievements. Some are related to the fluctuation of domestic raw material prices. As part of its future vision, it has also overhauled production processes to optimize outputs. Besides the mine we just talked about, there is one other major fire clay deposit which is located in Charmahale Bakhtiari province. This mine offers 12 million tons of proven reserves, and it is set to produce some of the best quality refractories in the region. Each year, a combined average of 300,000 tons of fire clay are exported. Iran's tile and ceramic market have become very attractive with rapid socioeconomic development in the West Asian region. Also, there is an increasing need for new housing units in neighboring countries. There are some of the things that are driving Iran's export market in this field. So the country has stepped up its production to gain a larger share of the market. We looked at the latest figures from the Ministry of Industry to gain more insight into the productions in this field. Data showed that in the year 2020, roughly 400 million square meters of tile were produced in Iran. Such productions were estimated to be worth nearly $450 million. These productions were more than local needs, so nearly 160 million square meters of tiles were exported. Industry participants say that this sector is presently operating at only half of its total production capacity, adding that it has high export potential. With this in mind, the Ministry of Industry, Mining and Trade is working with the government to find ways to expand its markets through production. The goal is to increase production levels by 300 million square meters over the next 4 years. Analysts estimate that this will generate an additional $2 billion in foreign revenues if the strategic sector taps into the full capabilities. Fire clay does not only feed the tile productions. It also supplies raw material to manufacturers of sanitary ceramic ware, such as sinks. Iran currently makes copious amounts of these items. In fact, in the first half of last year alone, over 70,000 tons of sanitary ware were released into the market. Going off on information from the National Customs Administration, these items were mainly exported to neighboring countries. The country's light and heavy construction sector is booming with construction materials in high demands. It is worth noting that domestic raw materials such as fire clay meet 100% of Iran's construction needs. But you don't have to take my word for it. Here are some statistics on the construction materials market. Iran's steel, cement, tile, and ceramic industries produced more than twice the country's internal needs. Last year, exports of these items raked in some $10 billion in foreign revenues. Tile, glass, and ceramic exports compose some $3 billion of total exports. Steel exports accounted for the rest. That's all based on statistics from the Ministry of Industries, Mining and Trade. On another note, the country's mega mining and metal sector, which also supplies the construction sector, has grown by leaps and bounds in recent years. Industry participants say this was mainly due to the U.S. sanctions on the oil industry, which led to more focus on other sectors. Much of this expansion is in large part made possible by linking research institutions with manufacturers. This step was critical for sharing knowledge in collaborative product development. Catalysts are the unsung heroes of the chemical reactions that make human society tick by. They help speed up chemical processes between molecules that might have been taking years to interact. Factories rely on catalysts to make everything from plastic to drugs. Catalysts also help process petroleum and coal into liquid fuels and are key players in clean energy technologies as well. However, their biggest use happens in the oil and gas industries.
All right, everyone. Now I will pass it over to my colleague who has prepared an interesting feature program for you all. Let's take a look.
You definitely have a clear image of a concrete or a steel structure. But when it comes to tensile structures, you most likely cannot picture anything. They're self-standing structures, carrying only tension and no compression. Mostly made of membrane or industrial fabrics, they're most often used for roofs and canopies, creating unique private and public spaces. Mahout is the name of an Iranian company that makes all kinds of tensile structures. Tensile structures can cover vast areas. While they're lightweight compared to other types of construction, they're extremely strong. Tensile fabric structures are designed and engineered to withstand even the most severe weather conditions, providing protection from both rain and sun. Mahout says its products are made using the latest technology and high-quality materials, on par with their international peers. Mahout has under its belt a dedicated team of experts who are constantly exploring new trends and efficient designs for eye-catching yet resilient tensile structures. While the Iranian brand has a strong foothold in Iran's market and is eyeing higher horizons, Mahout says it's working to undertake international projects. Offering a unique landscape for outdoor eateries, restaurants, and coffee shops, tensile structures are beginning to attract more attention in the architecture industry. This means the future market will be lucrative for the actors in this field. And Mahout says it will stand out, as it believes quality is in the details.
There is so much more that can be said about knowledge-based products, so let's take a look at some news and trends in this field. You have probably heard the phrase NFT, or non-fungible tokens, being thrown around recently. The very first Iranian NFT issuance platform was established and launched in the country.
The platform is called Bita. It was created by a company in the field of developing digital technologies in the information communication technology sector. Bita digitally certifies artistic and non-artistic works in the form of non-fungible tokens. The developer says it plans to increase international access and grow the platform's ecosystem to determine accurate asset values. People can purchase NFT that are backed by authentic art approved by the system and sold at auction.
Most people don't think twice about fungi, but what if it could be used to help treat diseases? Well, an Iranian knowledge-based company has managed to come up with the technology to produce rare medicinal fungi.
This company focused on producing four species of medicinal fungi. Once cultivation conditions have been established, these plants can be mass-produced. Its medicinal properties will be used in the form of tablets and capsules. These fungi have the potential to treat liver disease, immune deficiencies, diabetes, and some skin diseases. Plus, the four species can now be cultivated in 3 months.
The number of cars and pollution increases as cities grow, and one way to manage this issue is to create specialized technology. Domestic knowledge-based companies and startups have developed 17 innovative products to improve road traffic and reduce air pollution.
The products were developed to address the rising number of vehicles and inner-city trips in cities nationwide. Some of these smart products are used to record traffic violations, collect traffic information, and license systems for restricted traffic zones, among many others. Smart traffic monitoring systems have also been developed by these companies.
We are fresh out of time for our program for today. Thank you for tuning in.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
اقرأ باسم ربك الذي خلق.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. يا أيها المزمل قم الليل إلا قليلا نصفه
أو انقص منه قليلا أو زد عليه ورتل القرآن ترتيلا.
قد دعوتك ربي بقرآني جنبني حراني.
Let's recite the Quran.
ناجيتك أرجو غفرانك يا من ينجينا إحسان. ودعوتك ربي بقرآني.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرج.
Assalamu alaikum, respected brothers and sisters, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Welcome to Let's Recite the Quran Kareem, a series of Quranic sessions held by IRIB English Radio in cooperations with Sevier International Schools Network. I'm really, really happy that I have again here in this session Brother Hassan Nasrullah, Hussein Ruhullah, and Fawad, and also Ali Nasir. Assalamu alaikum, brothers. Welcome. How are you, Fawad?
Fine, sir. How are you?
Alhamdulillah. Thank you so much, Hassan. How are
Fine,
you?
Fine, sir. How are you?
Good. MashaAllah. Ali Nasir?
Alhamdulillah, sir.
MashaAllah. Great. Alhamdulillah. How is it going, Hussein?
Alhamdulillah, sir. How are you?
Thank you so much. Are you ready, inshallah, to start our class?
Yes.
All right. Inshallah, today we will talk about Ayah 120, the last Ayah of Surah Al-Ma'idah, and page 127. لِلَّهِ مُلْكُ السَّمَاوَاتِ وَالْأَرْضِ وَمَا فِيهِنَّ وَهُوَ عَلَىٰ كُلِّ شَيْءٍ قَدِيرٌ. All right?
Yes.
So
yes.
We will have a short explanation and then tajweeduls and the recitation, inshallah. So, brothers and sisters, hope you have your Quran with you. Turn to page 127, the last ayah of Surah Al-Ma'idah, ayah 120. 120, yes?
Yes.
So, let's get started by listening to the recitation.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Lillahi mulku as-samawati wal-ardi wa ma fihin. Wa huwa ala kulli shay'in qadir.
That was nice recitation, mashallah. So, we listened to the recitation. Let's see what does Allah Almighty say in this ayah. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Allah Almighty says in ayah 120 of Surah Al-Ma'idah. Lillahi mulku samawati wal ard. Lillahi mulku samawati wal ard. Wa ma fihinna. Wa huwa ala kulli shay'in qadir. This is a very, very beautiful ayah. Look. What does Sama means? Sama what?
Skies.
The skies or the heavens.
Yes.
What does Ard mean?
Earth.
Earth. Yes, the earth. Maybe English word earth is taken from Arabic. Ard.
Yeah.
Okay. وَمَا فِيهِنَّ وَهُوَ عَلَىٰ كُلِّ شَيْءٍ قَدِيرٍ. So it says, to Allah belongs the kingdom of the heavens and the earth. وَمَا فِيهِنَّ and whatever there is in them, in the earth, in the skies or in the on the earth. وَهُوَ and Allah Almighty is عَلَى كُلِّ شَيْءٍ over every single thing قَدِيرٌ powerful. He has power over all things. So let's say some points about this ayah, but of course you have to refer to the Tafasir books as well to learn more, okay? This is just a short explanation that we have taken, we've chosen from the Tafasir books. First point is this, that Tawheed, which means monotheism, believing in one God. And who is that God?
Allah
Almighty. Okay, this is the name that Allah Almighty has chosen in the Quran. So Allah, He has many names. Allah, Ar-Rahman, the others are the attributes. Rahman, Rahim, Quddus, Subuh, yeah? Alim.
Salam.
Salam, Mu'min, Muhaymin. In Asma'ul Husna, you have the names of Allah. The 99 beautiful names of Allah Almighty. So, Tawheed has many instances. One of the instances of Tawheed is? Tawheed in? Malikiyah. Yeah, Tawheed in Malikiyah, believing that every single thing in the universe belongs to
Allah.
Allah Almighty. If you have, okay, if you have like a house, this house is for you, but it's not originally for you. Got it? Why? Because if it is originally for you, you should have it forever with you. Yes? If it is for you, you must be able to, to keep it for you. When you die, you can't keep it with you. Yes? The cars, the money that you have, whatever you have, you can't take them with you in the other world, in the next world, in the hereafter. You will leave them here. And you can't do anything to them. All right? If you have them, if that's yours, You have the permission to do whatever you want to do with it, yes? But you can't do anything when you die. So this means that these things that we have, okay, they are like, it's just for a temporary. Yeah, we have them for a short time, yes? The universe is what? The universe belongs to Allah Almighty.
Allah.
Whatever you see in the skies belong to Allah Almighty. Whatever you see on the earth belong to Allah Almighty. This is Tawheed and Malikiyyah. Okay? وَلِلَّهِ مُلْكُ السَّمَاوَاتِ وَالْأَرْضِ وَمَا فِيهِنَّ and whatever there is in them. This is the first important point. Second important point is that وَهُوَ عَلَى كُلِّ شَيْءٍ قَدِيرٍ. Look, when you have a mobile phone, you can do whatever you want to do with it. You can break it. You can drop it. You can keep it. You can sell it, yes or no? You can lend it to somebody else, yes? You can give it as a gift to somebody else, whatever you want to do. Okay? Look, Allah Almighty as well. وَهُوَ عَلَى كُلِّ شَيْءٍ قَدِرٍ. Allah Almighty has power over all things. So He has the right to do whatever He wants. Yes or no? But He does not do anything without wisdom. Anything Allah Almighty does is wise and precise and with knowledge. Got it? This is what does Qadir mean when we talked about power of Allah Almighty. Power, somebody has a power. So power can destroy anything. You have power, you can destroy the building. You can destroy your phone. You can destroy yourself, whatever. Okay? Because sometimes we might not use our power wisely. But Allah Almighty is not like this, God forbid. Okay, subhanAllah. We don't compare actually, okay? This is not okay. But kind of as a making example, making it clear. So, وَاللَّهُ عَلَى كُلِّ شَيْءٍ قَدِيرٍ talks about power of Allah Almighty, that Allah Almighty, even if He wants to practice or use His power, He uses based on wisdom, based on knowledge that He has.
قرآني نبض حياتي قرآني طهر ذاتي قرآني عصمة أمري قرآني طوق نجاتي قرآني نبض حياتي.
How to learn Quran easy? What is the correct way to read the Quran? What is the correct way to learn Arabic and understand the Quran? Be with Let's Recite the Quran.
Let's recite a salawat. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad wa ajil faraja. Let's move on to the tajweed rules. Let's mention some of the important ones here and practice the recitation. Okay. Is there any letter that we should pay attention to, Hussein, in this ayah? Any letter pronunciation?
Dad.
Dad. Uh-huh. Ard. Yes.
Wow.
Hamza.
Wow. Hamza. Uh-huh.
Yes.
Hamza. Wow. Dad. Ha.
Ha. Ha. Also.
Qaf.
Qaf. Yes.
Ayn.
Ayn. Yeah. These are the ones which are important. Yes? About tajweed rules. Other tajweed rules. Lillahi. Huh?
Light sound.
Ah, yes. Light sound.
A question.
Yes, what?
So, there's a kasra before the lam.
Yes.
In the word Allah.
Uh-huh.
So, if it was a different word, and before it, it was another word.
Mm-hmm.
For example, azim.
Yeah.
The ayah ends.
Yeah.
If azim ended with a kasra and the ayah did not end.
Yes.
Would it still be pronounced like this?
Yeah, of course. Because lam, look, it is lillah, li Allah.
What if you join azim to lillah?
Wait, azimu lillah. In the previous ayah, if you join. Thalika al-fawzu al-azimu lillahi mulku al-samawati wal-ardi wa ma fihin. Alright? So look, Fawad, that was a nice question. It is the word lillah is this way. Two words are there. Li Allah. You have
yes,
li.
Yes.
And the word Allah. Allah starts with Hamzatul Wasl. You have Hamzatul Wasl here. So now when you join li with the word Allah, Hamzatul Wasl will be omitted. So li Allah becomes
lillah.
Now that you have kasra before the word Allah, you pronounce the word Allah with an a sound. Lillah. Got it? What? Like bismillah. Suppose there is mim. Bismillah. Lilla, filla, billa. Okay? So these are the examples. Thank you. Nice question. So you pronounce it with an A sound because there is a kasra sound. If you have a fatha sound or a dhamma sound before the word Allah, you read it with an A sound. Like, qala Allahu. Yes? Now, the next point. Samawati. Those are light letters, okay? Lightly you should pronounce. Lillahi mulku samawati. Samawati wal ard. Wal ard wa ma fihin. Fihin. Do you remember we had a rule on a stopping at a word ending with nun mushaddad? Look how do I read this? وَمَا فِيهِنْ هِنْ. You extend the sound of nun. Okay? وَمَا فِيهِنْ. Extend it. Extend the nun sound. وَهُوَ عَلَى كُلِّ شَيْءٍ قَدِيرٌ. عَلَى كُلِّ شَيْءٍ قَدِيرٌ. فَوَدْ, tell us this rule and that's all. Shay'in qadir. Tanween plus qaf. What rule is applied? Shay'in qadir. Tell us.
Idhar.
Idhar or ikhfa?
Idhar. Ikhfa.
Ikhfa. Good job. Idhar means pronouncing the tanween, but ikhfa means hiding the tanween. So we hide it here. Kulli shay'in qadir. That's it. So, listen and repeat the recitation after me. Brothers and sisters, listen carefully and repeat. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
لله ملك السماوات والأرض وما فيهن
لله ملك السماوات والأرض وما فيهن
أحسنتم. There is the jim. What does that say, Hassan?
It says that it's optional to stop or
continue. Or continue. We chose to stop here. We made a pause. You can continue. Look, I will continue this time. لِلَّهِ مُلْكُ السَّمَاوَاتِ وَالْأَرْضِ وَمَا فِيهِنَّ وَهُوَ عَلَى كُلِّ شَيْءٍ قَدِيرٌ
لله ملك السماوات والأرض وما فيهن وهو على كل شيء قدير
وهو على كل شيء قدير
وهو على كل شيء قدير
صدق الله العلي العظيم
صدق الله العلي العظيم
أحسنتم. Thank you so much. Allah bless you, brothers and sisters, dear listeners. Thanks for being with IRB English Radio. Hope you stay safe. That was all from us for today. See you in the next session. Stay with IRB English Radio. Thanks to IRB English Radio. Thanks Fawad Hassan Hussein Ali Nasser, Sevilla International Schools Network. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa sallallahu ala sayyidina Muhammadi wa alihi al-tahirin.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad wa ajil farajahum.
Let's recite the Quran, a joint production of IRIB English Radio and Xavier International Schools.
نبع الهدى نرقى الجنان بحبي لن تستقيم حياتنا إلا به هو القرآن والفرقان إليه تنصت الأكوان وفيه تعطر الآذان والقرآن
The wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
Israel's war in Gaza may have brought devastation to the Strip, accompanied by the massacre of civilians, mostly women and children. But Israel's knee-jerk reaction to its complete intel and military failure at the hands of Hamas and resistance fighters may have another casualty, Israel itself. Prior to the war, Israel was not on solid footing. It faced many threats on a variety of fronts, most notably the judicial reforms. 8 months of protests against the Prime Minister Netanyahu and his extreme cabinet members had turned many inside Israel against Netanyahu. Israel's staunchest ally, the U.S., had expressed grave concerns about the push for the judicial reforms, with the U.S. President Joe Biden stating publicly that Netanyahu should not go for it. But Netanyahu did not, or could not, back out. Meanwhile, former Israeli politicians, like the former Prime Minister Ehud Barak, have expressed grave concern about Israel's survival altogether, saying the entity will cease to exist before the 80th anniversary of its 1948 establishment. He said Jews had not ruled for more than 80 years throughout history, predicting a doom and gloom scenario for Israel. This gloom and doom scenario was unfolding in Israel. Take the economy. Since the protests broke out 8 months ago, Israel's economy was heading down a downward spiral. This included lower GDP growth, a decrease in investment, especially in the tech sector, and both capital and Israeli flight. Israeli far-right ministers like Ben-Gavir and Smotrich promoted a crackdown on Palestinians. This included near-daily raids, resulting in deaths, injuries, detainments. The death toll had reached over 250, a record number. This is while Itamar Ben-Gavir was pushing the envelope when it came to the Al-Aqsa Mosque. In his long-term goal to Judaize the mosque, the number of raids inside the mosque accompanied by settlers and the regime security forces were increasing. Hamas and the resistance groups issued warning after warning about the desecration of the Al-Aqsa Mosque, that the time would come when it would retaliate, but that had fallen on deaf ears. Until October 7th, when Operation Al-Aqsa Flood was executed. Defense One News, close to the U.S. military, had this to say about the Hamas and resistance fighters. They have absolutely exquisite intelligence on the location of Israeli secret bases and their communications capabilities. They knew exactly where to go, knew where the critical communications nodes were, that they were able to destroy with drones and other kinetic strikes to try to impede the response. And that they did, and even more. Israel was caught off guard, flat-footed, and within a blink of an eye, its invincibility shattered. Dropping U.S. bombs on innocent Palestinian civilians would not solve Israel's problems. It actually made it worse. And this carnage, which included deaths on a massive scale, mostly women and children, engulfed the entire world, which came out in protest against the Israeli regime. And like a house of cards, it brought the rest of its supporters down with it, which included resignations of high-ranking officials. The U.S. image was now tainted, associated once again as an accomplice to the one committing war crimes like it did in Yemen. The State Department official, Josh Paul, resigned over the Biden administration's militaristic approach to the conflict. He said he could not support sending over arms, which he believed to be short-sighted, destructive, unjust, and contradictory to the very values that we publicly espouse to. U.S. politicians, mainly Democrats, were also voicing their anger at Israel and U.S. military assistance. Spain's acting Minister of Social Rights, Bellara, called for economic sanctions against Israel and the suspension of diplomatic relations, one of many government officials around the world who are rethinking their relations with Israel. Many Israelis are blaming Netanyahu for the downfall of Israel and have demonstrated against them, demanding his resignation. Settlements emptied along the Gaza border, an incapable army, an economy tanking, a war that has lost already, especially when it comes to world opinion, and the occupied territories now filled with hate between armed settlers and Palestinians, ready to blow up. Israel is facing an existential threat that may deal the final blow. They have tried to suppress the voice of the Palestinians. Common catchphrases, all-out support for Israel, unwavering support, and the likes. But finally, the world is not buying it. No amount of media coverage can cover up the Israeli crimes, including America's all-out support.
And we stand with the Palestinians, and we stand with Arabs. And they try and change the narrative because you own the narrative, see? This is our problem. You own the narrative. You own the United Nations. You own Hollywood. You own all these mouthpieces. Where are our voices? Our voices need to be heard as well. We've been watching your channel. And instead of mourning our dead, instead of mourning these Palestinian children, we've been having to deal with more dehumanization of Arabs.
and the proof that the tide is turning are in the worldwide protest.
Are here just to show the support for our people in Gaza.
What we're experiencing today, it's happening in Palestine, is a genocide.
I'm here because I'm a Jew born in Jerusalem, and I'm horrified and enraged that my government here in the U.S. is sending weapons and money and never-ending, unconditional diplomatic support for Israel.
The world rallying behind Palestinians and Palestine. And it's not because Israel is murdering Palestinians, mostly women and children. Just think about it. How can this war bring out so many people from all corners of the world in such high numbers? It's because the world has been educated. It's informed now. It has witnessed four wars before. And it has seen the daily oppression and killing of Palestinians under an apartheid regime. Now U.S. politicians are speaking in a way that they haven't before.
Congresswoman representing the Massachusetts 7th Congressional District.
Where is your humanity? How do you look at one atrocity and say this is wrong? But you watch as bodies pile up. As neighborhoods are leveled, Israel has dropped more bombs in the last 10 days than we dropped in a whole year in Afghanistan. Where is your humanity? Where is your outrage? Where is your care?
The passion in her voice from an American politician is for life and how it's being snuffed out, taken away with a missile, ones that are made in the USA. Since the war started, 45 cargo planes transported weapons from the U.S. to Israel. Among the military aid, around 1,000 tons of armaments, including 155-millimeter artillery shells, military vehicles, and supplies.
To President Biden and his administration, generations will not forget, and history will be recorded, that it was your administration, your billions of dollars, your support with weapons of mass destruction.
A veteran U.S. State Department official quit over what he described as the Biden administration's intellectual bankruptcy, in which he said Biden is rushing to provide arms to Israel, which is short-sighted, destructive, unjust, and contradictory to the very values that we publicly espouse. A CBS poll asked whether the U.S. should send weapons to Israel. More than half the respondents said that it should not. That is another first. And while we are on first-time occurrences, this is a first, which occurred at the Human Rights Council session in Geneva. The council members turned their back to the American ambassador's speech in Geneva. This happened during her speech preaching about human rights, while America's all-out support and bombs were killing Palestinians as she was speaking. The true face of the Israeli regime and the U.S. backing has rocked the U.S. status quo when it comes to Israel. Widespread attempts to suppress pro-Palestinian voices have reached unprecedented levels in the U.S. The cancellation of major conferences, demands for the dismissal of workers who express support for Palestinians, and intimidation campaigns against Arab American voices critical of Israeli policies are just some examples. This has even affected U.S. lawmakers, like Senator Elizabeth Warren, once a U.S. presidential candidate, in which more than 260 of her staffers signed an open letter demanding that she call for an immediate ceasefire between Israel and Hamas, describing Israel as increasingly fascist, that commits war crimes and enforces a brutal apartheid, calling for an immediate ceasefire. But only certain U.S. lawmakers have the guts to openly support Palestine.
You know what's so hard sometimes is watching those videos and the people telling the kids don't cry and like let them cry. And they're shaking and some of you know this, they keep telling them not to cry in Arabic. They can cry, I can cry, we all can cry. If we're not crying, something is wrong. And so I'm telling you right now, President Biden, not all America's with you on this one.
Previous Israeli crimes are no secret. Kana, 1996. Israel bombed a UN shelter, killing 106 civilians, mostly kids. Israel was never held accountable. Lebanon, 1982. The Sabra and Shatila massacre resulted in the killings of between 2,000 and 3,500 Palestinian refugees and Lebanese civilians in 2 days in the city of Beirut. Previous massacres of Palestinians by Israel have been etched in people's minds, especially the wars on the Gaza Strip, which is why the BDS movement, Boycott, Divestment, and Sanction, requires a reboot, one to include Israeli officials, including the pilots who dropped the bombs, on the Palestinians. After all, now is the time that sanctioning Israeli products could prove successful, since Israel's economy is tanking due to the war. We mentioned a couple of first-time incidents before. Here's another. Thousands of Muslims praying in front of the U.S. Congress to demand a ceasefire in Gaza. A scene that creates a sense of deja vu. For this is reminiscent of how Palestinians have prayed in front of the Al-Aqsa Mosque in their future capital. Since the beginning of the latest spate of violence between Israel and Palestinian resistance fighters in the Gaza Strip, Western countries and the U.S. in particular have voiced their unequivocal support for Israel and ignored the legitimate rights of the Palestinian people. The U.S. President Joe Biden visited Israel on Wednesday amid an intensified Israeli campaign of airstrikes on Gaza, the most densely populated strip of land in the world, which has killed thousands of Palestinians, injuring over 13,000. Biden has unequivocally defended the Israeli regime's ongoing genocide in the coastal Gaza Strip. Biden said Washington would provide the embattled regime with everything it needed to, quote, defend itself.
For decades, we've ensured Israel's qualitative military edge. And later this week, I'm going to ask the United States Congress for an unprecedented support package for Israel's defense.
The U.S. president promised to ask Congress for an unprecedented military aid package for Israel to assist its ongoing war on Gaza. Reports indicated that Biden was considering a supplemental request of about $10 billion for Israel. It is now feared that the U.S. President Joe Biden's unflinching backing of Israeli aggression against Palestinians in the besieged Gaza Strip could give the Tel Aviv regime the green light to commit mass atrocities and genocide against the people of Palestine. It is now reported that Joe Biden has told the Israeli Prime Minister that Washington is fully in support of Tel Aviv's plans to launch a ground invasion of the besieged Gaza Strip. Earlier this week, the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Khamenei, highlighted the role of the U.S. in Israel's ongoing atrocities against the Palestinian people. Ayatollah Khamenei noted that numerous pieces of information suggest that the U.S. is formulating the current policy within the Zionist regime. The U.S. was the sole vote against the resolution on Wednesday. Reports say the Pentagon, if need be, will deploy virtually 2,000 troops to Israel to assist the occupying regime with its war on the besieged Gaza Strip. The boots on the ground are said to be tasked with providing advisory and medical support only. The specifics, the where and when of the deployment, remain unclear. The report comes after the Pentagon said it was moving another carrier group to the Mediterranean, the USS Dwight D. Eisenhower Strike Group. Combined force of more than 5,000 sailors will join the USS Gerald Ford, which arrived off the coast of Israel last week. The Biden administration has rejected Arab calls for de-escalation or ceasefire, rendering the U.S. complicit in present and future Israeli war crimes. There's been hardly any American mention of the Palestinians' plight during a week of vicious Israeli bombardment of Gaza. For years, polls have highlighted the overwhelming Arab support for Palestine as the foremost Arab cause, and the growing hostility towards America, which is seen as a destabilizing hegemonic force in the region.
There is the possibility that if the war really widens not only to include Gaza, but maybe the West Bank, that it will not only alienate Arab allies, but could potentially lead to breaking of relations with Israel?
First of all, Biden is unwelcome here because he has a major role in this game, a major role in the aggression on our people, and he is providing the money and weapons to kill our people in Gaza and everywhere.
The long history of U.S. military aid to Israel has helped the regime develop its military prowess, and it continues to represent a significant share of Israel's military budget. Currently, Israel receives $3.8 billion in military aid from the U.S. annually, under a memorandum signed in 2019.
Instead, what we have seen is that Israel has been allowed to do whatever it wants when it comes to killing Palestinians, when it comes to stealing Palestinian land, when it comes to ethnic cleansing, when it comes to crossing the red lines that are enshrined in international law. Israel's allowed to get away with it, and not only get away with it, but continues to receive support and financial support from the United States as well.
That accounted for about 16% of Israel's total military budget in 2022. The U.S. has strong historical and economic ties to Israel. The U.S. is Israel's top trading partner, with annual bilateral trade of nearly $50 billion in goods and services.
IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Iran's leader Ayatollah Khamenei says the U.S. is definitely an accomplice in Israeli crimes against Palestinians in Gaza. Palestinian officials in Gaza say that Israel has dropped more than 12,000 tons of explosives on the besieged territory. The death toll tops 6,500. And pro-Palestine rallies go on across the globe, with protesters condemning Israel's brutal aggression against Gaza.